Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning, and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back in the studio. I'm Lynette with you and Dr. Jerry Mixon, also Dr. Samira Umat, taking a lot of calls today.
You're just waving your arm like royalty. Yes. Here.
There we go. Yeah, when Mark says my name, I just kind of give the princess wave back to you. We're headed to Linwood this morning. Sheila is on the line. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, Sheila.
Hello, Sheila.
Hello. I was calling to seek information about nodules in the lung and if it has a relationship to having caused pneumonia three times last year and yes. COVID.
All right. Yes. Well, nodules are basically just what they say. When they do the X-ray, they see it looks like a little lump in the lungs, kind of a dense spot. They're usually just scar tissue. Some of them are old fungal infections. Some of them can be, you know, small injuries from the past, like little blood clots and stuff that have now been healed and scarred down. So nodule is pretty non-descriptive as to what the pathology is. So yes, they can be related to previous infections, they can be related to COVID, they can be related to fungal infections if you've ever traveled down in the Southwest, especially when it's windy down there.
No.
So, all right. So the diagnosis of nodules is a big thing. You have to take a close look at the nodule itself, see what its characteristics are. Sometimes a good radiologist can make an educated guess as to what the nodule is from just from the way it looks on his X-rays, but you know I can't. So,
okay.
Leave that to them.
The second question: does it have any relationship to having had pneumonia three times in one year?
Oh. Yes, it could.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, whatever is causing enough irritation to form the nodules can certainly set you up for the potential to get, you know, recurrent infections. Mm-hmm. And that's what a pneumonia is, just infection of the lung. So, Okay. Yes, it may well be related.
And they have had me on for some time with an inhaler for asthma. Uh-huh. And it has a name you can't even pronounce.
Unless you're a doctor.
Ending in ellipta inhalation powder.
Uh-huh.
And the paperwork that comes from the pharmacy with it says it can cause pneumonia, which it has. It can cause tremors. I have had essential tremors for years. It can cause back problems. I've had that for years. I mean, why am I on this stuff?
Mm. Well, most likely because they're trying to open up your airway as a bronchodilator so you move air in and out of your lungs more efficiently. That's generally why they would give it to you.
And do you think that outweighs getting pneumonia three times in a year and COVID?
I doubt that the prescription is the cause of the pneumonias. but you know, I can't swear to it. So,
but it says right on the paperwork from the pharmaceutical company that produces it can cause pneumonia.
Yes, and that just means in the research papers that were done, it could indeed, they found some people that developed pneumonia. Can you tell me the name a little bit so maybe I can figure out what's in it, what kind of powder we're talking about?
Yeah, maybe spell it a few letters for us.
It's the first, it has five names. FLUTICASONE. Next word is FUROATE.
Yeah. Fluticasone.
Then VILANTEROL.
Oral inhalation.
And then
Tulipta
inhalation powder.
Yes. Yeah, it's a inhaled corticosteroid.
That's why the back pain.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are cortisone-like drugs. They're just in a powdered form. And the interesting thing is they're very, very good at decreasing inflammation in the lungs. They're very, very good for people that have had asthma and so on because they help prevent the bronchospasm. But the steroid effect can indeed decrease your ability to fight infections, and that's why the pneumonia is related to it. So, yeah, this whole class of drugs, all of these corticosteroids, whether they're as mists or powders, can indeed raise your risk of getting pneumonia.
Do you think spending 47 days on the last pneumonia, starting in December and ending in the beginning of February, is worth it?
Well, it depends on why they're giving you the steroid in the first place. Do you have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you know, COPD, emphysema,
sort of stuff?
Asthma.
Yeah. All right. Well, I would be interested in finding a different asthma medication for you then, if I possibly could.
I sure would be, too.
So
I'm going to see the pulmonary doctor finally.
Good.
And I'm going to have to argue with him that the benefit outweighs not only the misery, but the cost.
Yes.
To Medicare and my insurance.
All right. Yep. But you chat with your doc. You know, explain that this you've been told this is a steroid, and that you have indeed had multiple episodes of pneumonia, and you would like to try to do something that does not involve inhaling a steroid, if you can. Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's very helpful.
Okay, take care.
We wish you luck, bye-bye. Sheila. Thank you for calling.
Yeah.
You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, and we have phone lines available for you right now. Here's the number to call, 206-421-5757. We'll put you right in the queue and get to you as soon as we can, 206-421-5757.
Now, everybody knows that my brain goes in different directions sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Where's it going?
Well, when she said her name, Sheila, the thing that flashed into my mind was, why do Australians call all women Sheilas?
Okay. I'm going to Google that.
Sheila is a slang term in Australia for a woman.
Yeah, it is.
In America, it can be, you know, gals, dames, skirts, you know.
Okay.
These are mostly from the 1940s and 50s when you could do things like that. But I'm just wondering where the word Sheila became synonymous in Australia for a woman.
All right. Well, Lynette is going to Google
that. There you go.
No idea.
Yeah. It originated from Ireland. It's just Australian slang for a girl or a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all they say.
Okay.
Is considered.
Well, I knew that.
One of the milder Australian slang insults.
Well, yeah, there's all kinds of.
So best not to use it. So don't be calling us Sheila's.
That's right. Well, you know, I don't spend much time in Australia anyway, so not high risk. But yeah, I just, when she said her name, that was what popped into my kind of strange brain.
Okay, and I may have been in Australia with you thinking of that. And the little quokkas.
I was definitely not there with you.
You weren't there,
okay?
Yeah. And the little quokkas, the little furry teddy bear animals
that
throw their babies at predators in order to escape. So if you think you're a bad mom.
You can always have another baby, you know.
Oh boy! Let's take our next caller. Get the question.
Do the males throw their mates at the predator instead?
I don't know. With a mom that angry, I don't think the male would mess with them.
Not
if they're smart. Okay, let's go to Bellevue. We have Dan there. Let's get Dan's question.
Hello, Dan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Colin. Good morning, doctors. I've been taking rapamycin, I think, since November, 6 milligrams a week.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I've had pretty good results, probably the best result, increased urination. And the day I take it, I feel really good.
Yep.
So I followed your rule, if you don't measure, you don't know. And I did the LabCorp test recently, last week. I took it on an empty stomach and an hour and 20 minutes later, I did the test, and I was kind of surprised at the result. It said less than one out of 3 to 20 nanograms a milliliter. So now I'm really confused, and I'm calling you.
Oh, boy. Okay.
It's the same, too, Jerry.
I don't know.
All right.
Yeah, same thing happened to me, actually. Tell you what, we need to take a little break here, and we'll come back, and I'll talk to you about blood tests to track
rapamycin
levels.
Okay. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, and the phone lines are open just for you at 206-421-5757. We'll be back to talk about rapamycin with Dan and the doctors in just a moment. Stay right there.
Bad idea.
No, Dr. Mixon's music reviews with you.
That's a terrible social thing.
Yeah, don't be begging, right?
You don't get on your knees and you beg. If she's left, she's left.
Okay.
You know, you can't make people love you.
That's true.
And begging is
a waste of time.
A waste of time and
energy.
Degrading.
And degrading, yeah.
You know, very few women really want a man who get on his knees and beg.
That's true.
Most women want a man who is a man, who is strong, not a who will grovel and beg and, you know, debase himself in hopes to getting her favor.
I guess the only time they want them on their knees is when they're giving the ring.
That's right.
That's true. I do like that. Yes.
Right. You can kneel and ask her to marry you.
There you go.
You know,
okay. You heard it from Dr. Love,
right.
Dr. Jerry Mixon, and Dr. Samira Umat. Yep. All right. Let's talk about rapamycin and blood levels with Dan on the line from Bellevue.
Okay, Dan.
We're back.
For one thing, I'm not at all sure that blood levels have diddly squat to do with how well the drug works. Mm. I have now seen a couple of studies on the acid protected, the liposomal forms that are supposed to be, you know, acid proof, and those do give you higher blood levels. But I haven't seen that they have any more or less effect. Hmm. They have done studies, for instance, on the sirolimus, the generic versions of of rapamycin on the folks getting their transplant suppression, and they seem to work just as well. And so the brand names make a big deal out of acid stability, but I'm not sure that they work any better.
You measured after the brand name as well as after the compounded, and the result was the same.
The result was the same either way. So whether that low, that effectively zero number is a result of some of the way LabCorp is measuring it, or if you simply clear it, or you're using it up and it's getting into your tissues so well, so fast, because it's not being, it's not staying in the bloodstream. It's going somewhere.
I guess the question from my point of view would be, in this case, should we increase the dose?
Well, that's the question. And, you know, I generally am using a higher dose than 6 milligrams.
Well, I know you are, but we can't.
Well, we can. It's just a question of what are the adverse effects? And, you know, and are we getting high enough to suppress SIRT2?
But if we can't measure to know, then what is our gauge for saying, oh, precisely, you go higher and you don't?
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, that's what we have to be looking at, is what are we trying to accomplish? Now, this gentleman, his marker appears to be his urinary stream. Mm. He's peeing better. And we get a fair number of guys that are saying, yes, I'm an older guy, my urine was slowing down, and now I'm taking the rapamycin and I'm peeing good again. Mm. I certainly noticed that. Mm. I am very sensitive to how my body functions. I can tell the difference from where my testosterone load is on a given day. Mm. And I get a real psychological boost with my rapamycin. So, you know, I use it by both how I feel and how I'm peeing. But I haven't been able to get a reliable blood test on the rapamycin. Now, I talked to Dr. Lee, Brandon Lee at the pharmacy.
Okay.
And Brandon was telling me that he now has a potential fix that he wants to try out.
Okay.
And that is, he has gotten some acid-resistant capsules that he will put the rapamycin capsule inside of a second acid-resistant capsule. Mm. And that the outer one starts getting eaten away in the stomach, saves the inner capsule till it gets in the gut, where then it dissolves, mm-hmm. and releases the rapamycin after it's through the acid of the stomach. Mm. And you know, I've told him next time when he does my next order, put him in the acid resistant ones, and I will then check the blood levels once more.
Okay.
To see if I get better blood levels with the acid-resistant capsules than I do with the standard generic version.
Okay.
And so I'm not going to be due for another dose for probably a couple of months. I think I bought 100 1-milligram capsules last, or 1-milligram pills last time. So I've got a few months to go. But next time I do a refill, I'm going to have a few weeks supply put into those special capsules.
Okay.
And then I'll run my blood levels again. So does that
Well, that's great information. I'm glad to hear the brand name got the same result as well, because that was one of my questions.
Yes. And the brand name cost a whole lot more.
Yes.
So. Yeah, exactly. I did just get a refill last week, and maybe I need to speak to Brand, and I was going to do the same thing and request that enterocoded, and whoever I talked to didn't seem to know anything about it, but sounds like that might be possible in the future.
Well, Brandon owns the pharmacy.
Right.
So he's the guy to talk to.
Yeah. So should I maybe, I guess this is just kind of guessing a little bit about this point, but I was thinking of maybe next time maybe trying it with grapefruit juice, or maybe doing like half an hour. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, that was just the clearance of rapamycin is extremely high from the bloodstream. And, you know, when you said an hour and a half, my first thought was, 95% of it's probably out of the bloodstream by now. It starts clearing in a matter of minutes from the time you absorb it. So if you look at the clearance curves, you can actually call those up online. Look at the image of the blood levels of rapamycin. And there are images up, and you'll see that curve goes almost straight downhill from the time the capsule dissolves to the time it's cleared in your blood. It's really fast. I've never seen anything that is cleared from your blood as quickly as rapamycin is, which, of course, makes blood levels, blood tests, pretty iffy. And yet people do get a result, and the result seems to last for a long time. During the period that's in your bloodstream, it's being taken up by your tissues really, really fast. And that seems to be where the effect is taking place, is in those tissues that have now taken it out of your blood. So
theoretically, I could test 5 minutes later then.
Yeah, you could take the test and, you might take a little water bottle, juice bottle with you, take it in the car as you're headed up the clinic to get your blood draw. let's see where it goes.
Okay, well, that was just telling me about that brand name got the same result. That's very good information because that was one of my concerns or next things to maybe try. So
Again, that was an N of one. It was just me testing it one time.
Right.
So, drawing long-term conclusions for a lot of people from one test on one person is pretty darn iffy.
But I guess there's a good chance, even though the test said less than one, I don't know if that means non-detectable or...
Basically, yes.
Still,
So...
I am getting the rapamycin, I just aren't not able to quite measure it.
That's right, and that frustrates me. I hate it when I can't measure, because if you can't measure, how do you adjust?
Right.
And that was what Dr. Umat was asking. What are your parameters? How do you decide that you're taking enough? Mm-hmm. Do you want to raise the dose? Do you not want to raise the dose? Mm-hmm. And what are you going to base that on?
Yep.
Yeah. So it would be nice if we had objective tests.
You had talked about before even a whole nother issue where it's something to do with the stomach or something like that, where the blood levels aren't going to be as so.
That's right. Well, and the other question is, is this effect on your gut?
Gut, yeah.
Mostly where this is happening. Mm-hmm. Is it on your microbiome in your bowel? Because we know the people who take rapamycin have different mixtures of bowel bacteria than people that don't take rapamycin.
Well, this is really wonderful because, I probably can't get in a point with my doctor for, a week or two or whatever. And having your radio show is so wonderful because now I don't have to fuss about it and worry about it. My questions. So you help. So I really appreciate it.
Okay, take care, sir.
Thank you, Dan, for your call.
All
right, more time for you to get through with your question, too. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and here is that number. It is wide open for you at 206-421-5757. Billy, we're going to talk with you next, then Lou. He's got a great question. 206-421-5757. Leading Edge Medicine continues in just a moment. Stay right there. Working 9 to 5, or in our case, early to noon, huh?
That's right. But 9 to 5, that was a cute movie.
It was.
I liked it. It is a male bashing movie. So,
oh, it is.
Samara,
oh,
you haven't hey. Seen it. But
gotta
if you're,
watch it.
Yeah, there you go.
If you're ever in an anti-male sexist mood,
there you go.
You can stream 9 to 5.
I pull cannot it up. Admit
That's
to
right.
it.
So.
Oh, boy. Well, we are back with Leading Edge Medicine, and we are headed to Linwood. We have Billy on the line. Good morning, Billy.
Hello,
welcome.
Billy.
Hey, good morning. Good props for you guys. My wife is very, very sensitive to hearing voices and things, and she listens to the radio show here every Saturday. And her comment wanted me to tell you that for Dr. Umat, she says that Dr. Umat's voice, that her demeanor and her manner is just wonderful. So thanks
Aww.
For that.
But Dr. Umat is a lady.
Yes, she is.
A lady born.
Wait a minute, I'm a lady.
Yes, Liza.
Crikey.
Lizzie Doolittle.
Move your blooming arms. Oh, boy. So I love that.
But as for me, I'm a 67-year-old guy and zero aches and pains. I'm on zero medications. I feel real good, but I'm concerned about my future. And so I signed up for your free health analysis at the Linwood Clinic this week coming up.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, good.
And so my question, I guess, is I plan on, I made a decision. I want to join, be officially a member of, is the best way to do that to sign up for this blood panel? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
very
yeah.
good.
When you go in for the HA, go ahead and have them do the blood panel. And, you know, because that way when the doctor follows up with you, they'll have the entire laboratory work that we want to get to make a good decision. And they'll be able to tell you what it is they think they can do for you and what they think it'll take to get you there. And, you know, it's always nice when you're starting off in a pretty good place like it sounds like you are. So mm-hmm. I like that.
Oh, okay, and then how long does it take to get the results of that blood panel back and make my appointment to go over it?
Usually, what, 10 days, two weeks?
Yeah. Yeah, we usually wait at least 2 weeks. The DNA age was delaying us, so we stopped doing that. So we're just doing the longevity blood draw. So you should be able to get back within 2 weeks. And then if you decide to join, we'll do the DNA age at that time for you.
Yep. Yeah, the DNA, okay. the DNA methylation takes about 6 weeks to get back, and we didn't want to make people wait that long.
I see. Okay. Great. Well, I will do that this week. I've got my appointment all set up for this week at Linwood. And then a question on selenium, the mineral selenium. Brazil nuts is the highest food in the world, apparently. Is it true that if you just eat 2 Brazil nuts a day every morning, that high selenium, you know, goes a long way towards possibly reducing any cancer risk?
Well, it certainly should help your thyroid function, since selenium is critical for good thyroid function. I'm not sure about cancer risk. I have not done a search on it, but you've kind of given me an idea of something I do need to pull up some papers. So,
but Jerry, you have done research on resveratrol and pregnenolone and cancer risk, and so there's a lot of supplements, nutrients that might help reduce cancer.
But he's asking specifically about selenium in Brazil nuts, and that's a pretty specific question, and I don't have a good answer for that one. You know, we have a whole lot of stuff we know we can reduce cancer risks in men and women. So, you know, that part is easy, but the question about selenium per se, and especially in the amounts found in Brazil nuts, I don't know. I don't have anything in my mental storage banks to come up with for that one. I'll have to go pull some papers and see what it says.
Okay, that's fine. And the only other thing I'm doing that I'll just share with you is every morning I have my little elixir, squeeze lemon juice into a cup, right from a lemon, and then add a whole tablespoon of olive oil, then a little bit of cayenne pepper. Drink that every morning. And that's supposed, you know, the cayenne pepper especially really can help prevent or clean out any plaque around the arteries and the heart. So that's what I think cayenne pepper is kind of famous for that. So that's what I'm doing in the mornings.
All right. Well, if you're if it's working, it's working. And so I'm certainly not going to tell you to stop. But I would be interested to see what all your lab work shows and see if there's anything hiding there that you're not aware of yet. So
that's what I'm looking forward to, is with this lab complete blood panel to see if some of these things I'm doing, you know, are effective. So I'll be interested to see that.
Okay. All right. Well, you take care, sir, and get on into the clinic. We'll do our best for you as fast as we can. So thank you for the call.
Thanks very much.
Good luck.
Bye-bye, sir.
All right. Thank you for that, Billy. All right. We'll just keep taking the calls. They keep coming. Let's go to Linden. Lou is in Linden. Good morning, Lou. Thank you for holding.
Good morning, everybody. Earlier today, I was reading Genesis in the Bible, chapters 11 and 12. That's the story that covers the Tower of Babel and the generations leading up to Abraham. And as you know, the Bible is the only book that's been in continuous publication since the invention of the Gutenberg Press. True. Over 500 years. It's the most widely published book in many languages ever. And I was curious when I was reading the genealogies about how the people leading up to Abraham are described as living, for example, 403 years. Apashad, he fathers Shelah. And they describe when they have their first child. And it sounds like gradually over time, they have their first child younger and younger in the late 30s or finally in the 20s. And their life expectancy is coming down gradually over time, so that we eventually end up with what we have today. If you're lucky, you live about 70, 80 years. So I wondered if you had a theory as to why these meticulous record keepers, the scribes, who tried to record everything so accurately, why they would have this interesting age disparities between the generations.
Well, an answer comes to mind, but it'll probably get me canceled.
Please don't get us canceled.
No.
But that's a very interesting question, though.
You always kind of wonder. They lived for so long.
Yeah.
In the day.
That's at least what it says. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I certainly wasn't around to check their work. So.
or do any physicals on any of them, right?
I don't know. You know, there's a lot of things about the Bible that when I compare them to what we're seeing today, raise my eyebrows a bit and make me ask some questions. Not that I really have much in the way of answers, but for instance, has it ever occurred to you that when in the Old Testament, which you're clearly reading, God is choosing his prophets, his spokesmen, right? And he clearly can choose anybody on earth he wants to choose. He's picking people that have qualifications that God thinks is appropriate to be his spokesman on earth, his prophet. And every single prophet he picked had multiple wives. They had multiple women in their lives. There was not a single monogamist among the prophets. None. Now, and David especially, who had 200 wives and 300 concubines, there's a man with ambition.
Is this your ambition, Dr. Mixon?
Was described as being a man after God's own heart. Mm-hmm. So
the culture back then was different.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, maybe that was the norm then.
Well, my point is, this was the man after God's own heart.
He was still human.
You got to ask,
yeah,
what on earth is that Heavenly Father doing up there if the guy with 200 wives and 300 concubines is a man after his own heart.
There you go.
I don't know. There's a lot of questions I have no answers for. None whatsoever. So.
Yeah. And Moses was a hothead that stuttered, and Noah was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
He used regular people and normal people to do his work,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. And so, you know, so when I look around the world and I see all these, you know, really pious, straight-edge folks as being the exemplars, I'm saying, yeah, but what about back there?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, God doesn't change, right? He's the same yesterday,
yes,
today, and
very
forever.
Very good. Dr. Mixon,
and
yes.
So if he's not changing and those were his standards,
then, with the culture,
yeah. we must be, you know, with a standard today that doesn't fit his opinions.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So what do you think about that, Lou?
Yeah, I think Solomon, though, outdid his dad. Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines.
Yes.
Maybe a little competition going on there, I guess.
700
yes.
wives.
And he was the wisest.
Hey, come on, you're a Hindu. You should be familiar with polygamy.
700 wives.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But, you know, but on the other hand, as long as we're wandering far afield, I went to medical school.
Marrying one every day? What's he doing?
I have no idea. Yeah, group marriages? You know, yeah, you yeah. 73 women. We're going to marry you this afternoon. I
don't
know.
Well, when you're living to be 900, you know.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
He didn't, yeah. But.
But, yeah. Yeah, when, in fact, I went to medical school at the University of Utah. And I once went through the Lion House, which is Brigham Young, where he lived with 27 wives. And I'm going to tell you how that struck me as a young medical student when I went in and looked at that.
Okay.
I'll be right back here
okay,
after
Lou,
this break.
You hang on the line. And Lois, you hang on the line as well. We're going to get to you right after this break on Leading Edge Medicine.
Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Sweet Caroline.
Bum, bum, bum. Oh, and we're back. The last few minutes of Leading Edge Medicine have never been so exciting as talking about...
or bizarre.
Yeah. Or different, yes, talking about... So what was your comment there,
okay.
Dr. Mixon?
Well, yeah, I went to Lion House. Now, Brigham Young had two homes.
Okay.
He had the Lion House, which is downtown Salt Lake City, and then he had what's now called Liberty Park. In his day, it was Liberty Farm. Okay. And I took a tour and I went through Lion House and, you know, you're upstairs and you have this rows of bedrooms on either side. This guy's got 27 wives. And, you know, as a young male, you kind of have this thing of, boy, wouldn't it be great to have all those women as your excess? And but then as a medical student, you know, I'm deep into the biology and I'm walking along there and I'm looking at all these doors for all these wives. And the only thing I could think of was... women drop their progesterone and PMS 1 week out of every four. That means this poor schmuck had six or seven PMSing women in his life every day of his life.
Wow.
Now,
you're right.
What man in his right mind would want that?
No wonder he traveled.
Yeah.
You know, oh, boy.
That puts a really kibosh on polygamy for me, guys. I got to tell you.
It kind of kills it. And if they're syncing up, then you're really in trouble.
Yeah, one PMSing woman would be out of 27? No. And then there is this thing that when women live together, they tend to entrain. Their periods all go in sync.
They do.
So now you got 27 PMSers at one time?
No, thank you.
Ain't no way in hell. That would be hell.
Oh, boy.
But then it occurred to me, wait a minute. I'm in Lion House, which is, of course, why they call him the Lion of the Lord. But he has Liberty Farm.
Yeah.
Where he sends the ones that are misbehaving.
Oh.
And the reason they call it Liberty Farm.
Now you're making stories.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Okay, well, what do you think about all that, Lou?
Now your imagination's
so I'm wild. I'm sticking with my one wife. Thank you very much.
Yes. My husband constantly tells me, yeah, I don't know how many, you know, can
and
handle
I'm
two.
Sticking with my one
man. Yeah, one is good.
I mean, they did what they did, but you know what? I'm perfectly happy where I am.
There you go. All right, Lou, how's that for you?
He's speechless.
He is speechless. Okay. We are going to take one last call. We're headed to West Seattle, and we have Lois on the line. Good morning, Lois.
Hello, Lois.
Good morning. I was scared to death that I wasn't going to get in my little simple question.
Yes.
Wow, I can't believe you all took okay. that much
it's
time.
It's all for
that.
You.
It just wanders off wherever it goes on this show, hon. So.
Well, anyway, I just have a. I'm in my 80s and I have problems with. Oh, the question is about this rapamycin mm-hmm. that you've been talking about.
Sure.
I know you associated with men, but what about women who have slow urination or due to kidney problems and bladder problems? Mm-hmm. Is this a medication that is offered to women? Or
yes, we have women take. We have women taking it, but the reason we use rapamycin is not specifically for urination. That just happens to be an effect that we have noticed in a lot of men. But the reality is rapamycin is the only drug that has ever been found to extend the lifespan of every animal we've ever tested it on. And so we're using it as a longevity promoter, something we're hoping that it will work as well on humans as it works on every other mammal on the earth. Mm-hmm. Okay. So every lab animal we've ever done rapamycin on lives about 15% longer than the animals without rapamycin. And
well,
so,
what about people who have, take me, I have kidney, stage 3 kidney disease, and I have bladder disease, and I have a major problem with my bladder going too much and this, that, and the other. Would you recommend that medicine for my condition? Because I'm not taking anything now.
The bladder doesn't worry me. The kidney disease, on the other hand, I'd want more information on before I could make a rational decision. You know, rapamycin is used, for instance, in people that have had kidney transplants to protect the transplant so they don't reject it. So, you know, I wouldn't believe there would be any contraindication for rapamycin in chronic kidney disease. But, again, I've never seen a paper on rapamycin in chronic kidney disease, but I do know that they use it routinely in people that have had kidney transplants.
Okay. Well, then would you recommend that I speak to, get to a doctor? I don't have anybody that's treating. Well, my doctor that treated my kidney disease 10 years ago or so when they first discovered it, she didn't put me on any particular medication. I was just supposed to avoid proteins and a special diet. But should I be on medication for?
You know,
most
of the time they don't put people on chronic kidney failure on a particular medication. They just monitor the kidney function and see, if it's going downhill, and if so, how far, how fast.
And there's no study suggesting that rapamycin might reverse or help with kidney problems.
I have not seen a single study showing that rapamycin has been used to improve kidney disease. No.
Okay.
So, my guess is it probably would do no harm. Whether it would do good or not, I just don't know.
But what about the bladder? Would it be a helpful thing?
It seems to have a potent anti-inflammatory effect. So to the extent that your urinary frequency might be due to inflammation in the bladder, it might help. You know, it's not an outrageously expensive drug. It's not one of those things that, that I would worry about. But I would want clearance from your doctor about your kidneys before I even considered your using it. So you need to talk to your kidney doctor and see what he says about it. My guess is he has never seen a paper on it either. He'll probably want to do some research.
I'm more concerned about this bladder problem than I am my kidney. I have pain. Does kidney does it cause a lot of pain when it's getting worse? because I have a lot of pain on my right side.
No, generally what happens is the electrolytes start going out of line. People may start getting spasms or cramps in their extremities and hands and legs and so on. So kidney failure is pretty much symptomless until it gets quite bad. And once it gets really bad, then you start retaining fluid. You get edematous, start getting fluid in your belly, that sort of thing.
It's not that bad. How do you spell rapamycin? I'm going to, I don't have a primary care doctor anymore.
Sure.
So I need to find one.
Okay. R-A-P-A.
R-A-P-A. P-A.
M-Y.
M-Y.
C-I-N.
C-I-N. Okay, great. All right, Dr. Nixon, I appreciate it. I love your show. I listen every week.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Lois.
Yeah.
So,
one of my doctors, I have extreme back disease, too, and I've talked to Dr. Nelson. I was on the treatment with him before the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
And I was supposed to get a procedure done. I think you had it done, too. I can't think of the name of it right now.
Vertiflex.
Huh?
Yep.
Yeah, the Vertiflex.
The Vertiflex, yes.
That did a great job
for my back, yes.
Yeah. Right. I'm going to get in touch with him again to see where that stands because I need help with that.
All right.
Yeah.
All right,
buddy.
Okay, well, we've got less than a minute left in the show, but thank you very much for the call.
Thank you, Lois.
Bye, Lois.
Call anytime.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Yes. All right. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you all for calling in. We had quite a few different callers, lots of different subjects. And we'll be back here next Saturday as well. If you'd like more information or find out something or perhaps even schedule your free health analysis appointment, here is that number to call. It's 1-866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website and get so much information, lmclinic.com. All right. Have a great rest of your weekend. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next time right here on Leading Edge Medicine.